Thank you for choosing this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. My name is Mark Ward, and this is the third in a series of podcasts about Threat Horizon 2024, the ISF's flagship report, but all those issues, dangers, cyber risk, etc., that'll be troubling organizations in the years to come. I'm joined today by Richard Absalom, a principal analyst at the ISF, who was instrumental in putting Threat Horizon together. And also here is Max Brook, a research analyst at the ISF, who was also on the team that wrote it and put it together. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for the intro. Richard here. I wouldn't say instrumental, by the way. I was there. You guys did the work.
Well, we did, but you were, yes, you were a good foil for all the conclusions we put out there, for sure.
And hi, Mark, Max here. Was really, really pleased to join the back end of putting the report all together.
Yeah, because it was, I think what I really enjoy about ISF research is just that it is that a communal experience. And in some respects, you have to defend your thesis. And certainly with Threat Horizon, that's because we do look forward and predict, and you do have to marshal your evidence. So yeah, it's a pretty rigorous process. It's a good thing to be with. And, you know, coming from journalism, which is pretty much fire and forget, with the ISF, you know, it has a great deal more longevity to it. But today we're going to be talking about one of the themes in Threat Horizon, and we picked the third theme, which is called Dirty Data Disrupts Business. And I think the reason we picked that was because, although it comes third, it's the issue it highlights is absolutely fundamental to the report, which has that subheading of, you know, the disintegration of trust. And these days, very much businesses trust the data that they use, that they gather, that they operate upon. There's an absolute dependence there. You know, data is the lifeblood, it's the oil, it's the, you know, that raw material that all organizations use. And we did want to highlight that we are worried about the integrity of that source in the next few years. Is it going to remain accurate? Is it going to be consistent? Is it, you know, are you going to have assurance that it's going to do the things for all the things that you expect it to do for you? And that's going to become even more important as organizations become more real time, use more of that data as it's generated, and as well as organizations try to speed up, you know, handle that digital transformation. So Max, if you can talk about the first threat in this particular theme, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah, so this one was looking at attackers poisoning the data well. So I think personally, this was a threat that I really enjoyed, you know, reading about and looking at towards, like I mentioned, the back end of the report. But because I think it kind of offers a level of subtlety that sort of differs from some of the other threats that we've analysed in this report and previous years, because it's not that sort of one-off kind of big level incident or attack or something like ransomware or a hacktivist, but actually it's sort of more subversive and underlying. So it's kind of assessing how adversarial actors will shift their strategy and their focus from threatening extortion campaigns towards damaging, as you mentioned, Mark, the integrity of data. So these trusted sources of information and data that organizations rely upon for a variety of business processes will begin to be manipulated by a number of actors, you know, ranging from nation states to competitors to sort of that lone wolf attack. And I think the worry really lies here in the fact that to organizations, a lot of this can be really unknown. So, you know, this idea of trust and this traditional relationship between business and the data they're using, I think is really being challenged by this, but often unknowingly. So, you know, business practices and outcomes will start to be shifted without actually an awareness or understanding that this is happening and, you know, potentially building in some pretty serious ramifications for organizations.
Yeah, it does seem quite a subtle threat. In the, you know, I think with ransomware, it's not quite a smash and grab, but you know when you've been hit, and often you've been hit very hard, certainly with ransomware. And there are some wiper ones out there as well that, yeah, definitely make their mark as soon as they turn up. But yeah, this is a much more subtle and insidious in some respects. I think as well, it's kind of crept up on organizations because there is that dependency there of data, and there is that let's say the expectation, that trust that the data they're getting from those sources, be that be it customers or you know, or a data broker or whoever, that is telling them telling that organization what it needs to know, and that decisions can be good decisions can be made on that basis. But yeah, but Richard, I don't know if you, I mean you've got more experience at the ISF than myself and Max. So is that, are we characterizing right now? I mean, I guess data's always been an issue for organizations, but it's just, you know, the volume's been turned up on.
Yeah, it's like you said, I really agree on this one. It's kind of that insidious threat that people don't think about too much, because, and I think we talked about this before as well, you know, in previous kind of discussions we've had, but over, you know, many years, confidentiality and availability of information have been the key things that people focus on. You know, obviously you don't want to go through that breach and you need the information to be there. Integrity has kind of been the forgotten cousin almost in the CIA triangle. And I think, now this is more of a, like you said, insidious. It's not necessarily going to be a big bang kind of attack where you suddenly, you know, the whole systems go down, but it really can do a lot of damage over the long term and be really hard to weed out, you know, to understand if, you know, if someone's just changing decimal places in research data or something, it can, you know, it'll take months for the results or the impact to be seen sometimes, but obviously that can be pretty devastating to then have to wind it back and work out where it all went wrong and where do you start again. So yeah, being able, this idea of just not being able to trust what's in front of your eyes is pretty difficult. And it's obviously something we're all used to in our other life outside security as well these days, right? Into so much misinformation flying around. What happens when that starts to deliberately target organizations is quite scary.
Yeah, I think that's very true, because certainly we've got some presentations coming up around Threat Horizon and just trying to rehearse some of what we're going to be saying. And I think, yeah, just to bring it home to people, it's just, yeah, well, it's not as if trust is, you know, there's a flood of trust elsewhere in the world right now. I think it's there's more and more distrust of information and you know, absolutely that's going to spread to the data sources organizations use. I think as well, there is one aspect of this that also did strike me was that some of the ecosystems of technology we've set up, like say you know, these display adverts you get on websites that, you know, they have real-time auctions in the background based on your preferences, etc. There's some incredibly complicated technology systems there, and I think some of those as well can become undermined. You do get free riders in those large systems because people find ways to exploit them. So I think as well there is, yeah, just there is that broader landscape of just distrustful ecosystems turning up, and it's a difficult place for organizations just to persist and exist at the moment, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think I was just going to touch on that point you made, Rich, about the idea of misinformation and disinformation, that, you know, I think it's important also just to outline the difference between those two, that, you know, there can be, you know, the targeted ideas and attacks of disinformation with, you know, a genuine sort of desire and motive from an attacker, but it's also, you know, this idea of misinformation where it's not necessarily a purposeful action, but it just sort of, you know, gets fed in and inbuilt into, you know, say the way an organization might use data. So it's that kind of twofold worry and concern as well.
Yeah. And I mean, the threat we've got in Threat Horizon, obviously, is specifically talking about poisoning the data well. So it's that deliberate kind of infusion. So it's more disinformation. But obviously, yeah, there's something organizations need to look out for, just understanding whether the data is accurate in the first place, whether through malicious means or just, you know, accidental, that it might not be completely accurate and kind of clean. So, yeah, certainly not just a malicious threat posed here.
No, and but our, because like you said, Richard, the integrity is part of that that triad that information security practitioners always pay attention to. So there must be good methods to assure integrity, but or is it a case of just the amount and the speed and just that dependency just ramps it up and it's getting more difficult? And I guess there must be some data science aspects to this as well, just in, you know, how you deal with that much data and be sure, and like the long term the long horizons you're working over, I mean it just becomes more and more of an issue.
Yeah, and what makes it more challenging at the moment, like I said, is that it's not just the sheer scale of data, which is literally everywhere coming out of our ears, but it's also used in real time. So how do you kind of monitor in real time the provenance and integrity of data? So I think, you know, possibly some of the things that are driving this threat in terms of the technology that can be subverted, especially around things like machine learning, you know, that's ingesting huge amounts of data in real time and kind of, you know, literally learning from it. That might also help in terms of the defensive side, or you know, how to actually protect it. And can we apply some of that technology to actually kind of monitor things in real time and check for check for accuracy and purity of data. So yeah, not to say that all is lost. You know, the things that are causing the issues can often be part of the solutions as well.
Yeah. Certainly, I think something I saw this week, which was obviously we've known about bug bounties for a while. A lot of organizations run those programs to try and find issues in their public-facing software. But I saw some chatter this week about bias bounties, which is to do exactly that issue, sort of machine learning training databases. And I think the idea is that, again, sort of for those independent researchers batter away at those and try to work out if the outcomes are fair or biased. And that's an interesting way to tackle this. But again, I guess you've got a risk issue there as well. Who are you handing this over to? Is it a good idea to be sharing this data? Are you getting, I think that's the insidious nature of this, is just you're left wondering who on earth you can trust or what you can trust or the measure you have to take.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Moving on then. So Richard, you can take us through that, the second of the threats in this particular theme, which is about fusion centers.
Yeah, so the second threat is very much related about misleading signals subverting cyber fusion centers. I think we should be clear pretty early on what do we mean by a cyber fusion center. So from a security point of view, this is essentially an evolution of a security operations center, or SOC. Our colleague Emma wrote a report about building a successful SOC a couple of years ago, and very much part of that looking forward was the future of the SOC. And I think that was back in 2018, actually, when it was published, but a lot of people were talking about the future being fusion centers, where SOCs are kind of more merged into business operations and kind of take on expertise from across the business, and essentially become increasingly proactive in being able to deal with threats, kind of working on threat intelligence and then actually enacting responses across the organization. And so what we're looking at for this threat by 2024 is the idea that cyber fusion centers will be more and more prevalent and kind of taking over from SOCs across large organizations, but also then that you can absolutely manipulate them. And we actually kind of first thought about this idea thinking around machine learning and this idea that you could manipulate defensive machine learning systems, right, by kind of sending them false signals, and then thought, well, actually, what's to stop anyone doing that towards, well, there'll be humans, but also all the different orchestration response platforms used by cyber fusion centers. So and I think, again, talking I think Mark, you and Paul Watts, the other primary author on the report, we're talking to members and experts about this and starting to see it actually kind of, happens very early days of this happening already. So we're seeing basically misleading signals around, threats or events, planted as false flags to make the cyber fusion center essentially attack its own organization. Because if you can, the example we've got is, for instance, in the report, and must be said, this is a fictitious scenario, but what happens in something like a stock exchange where it's running full on, and then there's a lot of threat intelligence comes in that says it's about to be targeted, potentially some ransomware hitting it. So the fusion center rightly takes very fast proactive action, takes lots of systems offline. And then you realize, over the course of several hours, there was there's actually no attacks incoming. And what you've done is taken down some pretty critical systems and stopped trading for hours. And that's a massive issue.
Yeah, I think because we've seen that with, not directly the misinformation, but we've certainly seen flash crashes, which is, those algorithmic systems that get convinced that something's going on and they all pile in. And so the speed with which things can go wrong is pretty quick on those automated systems. And I guess that's part of the threat here, that it's not just the misinformation, but it's the speed react.
It's the speed, but also the impact here is, again, it goes back to this idea of trust. The cyber fusion center works because there's this trust in the organization where the security team are given or empowered, essentially, to say, okay, if something's about to happen, we need to take proactive steps, which could involve taking key systems offline. Now, if you start doing that and kind of chasing ghosts and taking systems offline when there's no threats, that trust between the security team and the rest of the business then breaks down or starts to break down. At a time, as we're discovering, the whole theme of this report that is really required. This is, again, another really kind of insidious threat that just not only has an immediate impact in terms of what it can do, but also just chips away at that trust, you know, within the business, and that the systems that have been set up to protect it are actually working properly.
Yeah, I think so, because I, and with this as well, it it struck me as, you know, important, because it's to do with relatively mature organizations. If they have a cyber fusion center, they're making some decisions about what they want to do and how seriously they take InfoSec.
Yep.
You know, and you know, and they're starting to really unite the business aspect with the IT and the security aspect, and that's a pretty forward thinking, forward looking place to be. But you know, that's like, you know, pioneers. You can tell the pioneers by the arrows in their back. So I think that sometimes, yeah, they're forging the way, but there are some issues there that they have to look out for sure.
Yeah, you're right. There's significant investment to get a cyber fusion center in the first place. So you really don't want it to go wrong in this kind of way.
But again, are there good mitigations? I suppose that one side of this must be that the culture around, you know, taking that step, there must be, you know, any responsible mature outlook would definitely be have some culture and education aspects to this as well. So you don't just head off in one direction and have IT or security calling all the shots. But is that one of the defences here, or is it?
Absolutely. There's an education and risk awareness piece here, in the sense that, you know, when you're setting up a cyber fusion center, you know, one of the, this is now a potential risk you're introducing. So going in with eyes wide open to this is the kind of thing that might happen if you give this much, you know, empowerment and automation to one, you know, to the fusion center, this is something that might happen. So going in with eyes wide open that, okay, we may get these kind of false flag operations, we appreciate that. But also, you know, preparing for that kind of scenario, what can you do? How quickly can you recognize it? How quickly can you get back online? You know, kind of running those kind of scenario training and workshops to make sure you know, can recognize it when it happens, and how to deal with the aftermath as well. Kind of reassuring customers, both internal and external.
Yeah, certainly. I know a lot of, I've done a bit of work on CISOs and their responsibilities. Some of them, those folks I chatted to, had that good virtuous circle set up. So if there's an incident, then yeah, the information's fed back. There's, you know, audit assurance, etc. And you just make sure you learn from it. And I guess with this as well, you sort of, I think as well, that one of the problems is it becomes a, it enrolls huge chunks of the organization in that task, which is good in that, you know, a lot of people committed to that, to making sure things are going right. But equally, there's a lot of moving parts as well. It's quite a task, I'm sure, for any CISO involved with that. So moving on, the final one, the final threat in this particular theme then is digital twins double the attack surface. And I really like this one. I think it's one of my favorites in the report. I think because it's a bit science fictional, I think, because it's to do with those organizations that are marrying their physical infrastructure, be that a manufacturing plant or sort of industrial installation, something like that, with a cyber a copy of it. And the idea is that data flows between the two. You get real-time information from that physical plant, feeds into your digital copy, and you can run it faster as well. You can start to see some, if you need to do some preventive maintenance, you can model that production process. You can see how things are going and try out some changes to that before you actually enact them in the real world. And there's a lot of organizations starting to go that route. And as well, that it's starting to extend. So if you have a manufacturing plant, say you're a car maker, perhaps you have all those sensors on cars, and cars these days are pretty much portable computers. They feed that information back, it's gathered. And again, that feeds into the digital copies, so you can get some really useful information. And it's very much an organization in flight. Data absolutely at the bedrock of everything that organization does. But because you're opening yourself up to using that, then your attack surface has grown a lot. And there's a lot of novel technologies usually involved in that, 5G, edge, IoT, industrial IoT, and some of those systems are not particularly well protected. And again, it opens organizations up to these insidious threats that if somebody gets in, interposes themselves between the physical and the virtual version, and can tinker with it, then who knows what damage they could do. But it's, I think as well, that, you know, in the long term, there's some bigger aspects to this. But yeah, it's a tricky one, because organizations that adopted this are trying to move fast, trying to be innovators, and yet it does open them up to all kinds of issues. I don't know, Max, was this one you liked to read about? Was it one that struck a chord with you?
Yeah, I think, you know, as you mentioned, Mark, this is the kind of the more sci-fi sort of edge of this this threat, but it's this theme as well. But it does show the breadth and you know, the levels to this and how far it you know, these can really go. And I think, you know, what really strikes a chord with me through, you know, this one and all of them is just how, you know, continuous this threat will be, you know, throughout years, and this idea of, as organizations, you know, continue to devour as much data and gather as much information as they can and build these into AI, ML algorithms, or using this idea of digital twin, that it's almost like, you know, there might be a reckoning further down the line, or there might be a slight pullback and a check on this to really understand, you know, the consequences of this and where we're actually going with it. That, you know, there needs to be a really firm understanding of the uses of this and where and what parts of the business it's all touching.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think, again, it's sort of, what I don't like about this is that it does punish innovative companies, unfortunately. It does open them up to all kinds of issues. But I think as well, there are, you would hope that they would be doing those good information security tasks around the data they're using and are realizing how pervasive it is and are setting up that strategy to make sure that they, and if they're modeling this, then hopefully they would get some inkling earlier on that something is going wrong. But again, if someone interposes themselves or gets in the middle, then that's tricky. And I think as well, because it's obviously all those moves these days to lights out manufacturing, where the people are being removed from the process, and automation absolutely becoming more and more, you know, with some factories, some aspects, just there's no human involvement. All you get is data oversight, and that, which is good. Again, you know, lots of good innovation, lots of good experimentation there. But it's a potentially risky journey to embark on.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to take that as part of the course almost, though, if you're going to go for, you know, into innovative technologies, etc. That there's so many benefits to that. There's a reason that businesses go into this. And this is what we always have to remember as InfoSec professionals, right? There's a reason the business is doing this. And it's not just to annoy us and add risk. It speeds up processes, right? It kind of adds, yeah. It makes money. So, but yeah, with the risk is that whenever you innovate, there's always going to be someone trying to disrupt it and using the same technology for, you know, nefarious ends. There's always those bad guys there that look for any way in. So yeah, if you try something new, you've got to be ready to defend it in new ways as well.
Yeah, I think that's true. Certainly with, you know, the risky and the forward looking aspect of this, you know, if it was easy, everybody would do it. You know, how often has that been said around some of these kinds of projects and efforts to speed up innovate? I mean, when they definitely come with those problems that organizations have to confront. But I suppose as well, just to, you know, sound a slightly more hopeful note, yeah, I mean, there are ways not to mitigate all of this, but I think it's, you know, the start of the process is being aware that there are problems and doing that work to satisfy yourself that you've got the risks you're incurring are being managed, and that you can satisfy yourself about the data sources and what they're telling you. And it's not, you, but there is a step into the unknown here as well. You know, you do have to step outside that comfort zone if organizations have those, and take on some of this risk just to get it done, I think, as well.
Yeah, there's an element of that. You know, don't get anywhere without risk. But at the same time, yeah, obviously there are mitigations you can put in place here in terms of looking for biases. And kind of, you know, trying to check the accuracy and the provenance of data at source. You know, using only trusted sources where possible. So there's steps you can put in place to start with, and just preparing for it as well. Kind of understanding that these kind of threats are on the horizon, so to speak, what can we do to actually prepare for them, and kind of when they probably, well, inevitably do happen to some organizations, how do you kind of build resilience and react? And obviously, hopefully, from our point of view, just highlighting them is the first step there, kind of, you know, putting them out, saying these are things that might happen to you.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I think the ultimate aim for Threat Horizon is to give people a bit of a heads up about some of these things and get them having those conversations internally. Thank you to Richard. Thank you to Max for this discussion. And thank you to everybody else for listening too. You can find more podcasts on the ISF podcast channel or at securityforum.org, where you can also learn more about ISF research, tools, and guidance.